Welcome back. Second hour of the Scott Hamilton Show, brought to you by the U.S. Navy's Military Sealift Command. I'm still saying it's going to happen. I think he's going to leave Myrtle Beach State University, and he's going to settle in Blacksburg.
I'd love to see it. I think if anybody deserves it, he's the guy that deserves it.
I don't know if I would love to see it, but if it's going to happen, I want him to go there.
Yeah, all right, we need Jamie Chadwell in a Power 5 program.
It's just a matter of time. We've got to finish that NIL deal with Grayson McCall.
Still in the works.
I'm going to sign an NIL deal with our guest. Joining us on the Saitama Hotline, she's a triple threat journalist, 99.9 The Fan, WRAL sports fan in Raleigh. Lauren Brownlow, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm efforting an NIL deal with Coastal Carolina quarterback Grayson McCall to sport Love Myrtle it. Beach State University stuff. I've actually got the trademark in the works.
I love this idea. Yeah, and he's playing as well as any quarterback in the country right now. So, you know, it might as well strike while the iron's hot there.
Well, he agreed to wear it, so I'm like, dude, I'll absolutely split it with you. That'd be fine. I'm down with that.
And you can get him in a mullet, you know?
A Myrtle Beach State University branded mullet visor, one of those with the fake hair, but he's got his real hair.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, get him in a tie-dye, or like in a spray-painted shirt as well.
Some
yeah.
jorts.
Like, let's just lean in all the way into this.
We're going full Kenny Powers on him. Hey, Lauren, I don't know, and we'll kind of keep it on this topic because you're well-versed about all things in this universe. I'm pushing it already. Jamie Chadwell going to Virginia Tech, and one of the selling points for him to leave Coastal Carolina would be Enter Sandman. Where does that rank for you amongst the great entrances in college football?
Oh, yeah, it's great, and it's a great place to see a game, for sure. I would say it's pretty easily for me, a top two in the ACC would be Clemson and Virginia Tech. They're just different. There are other places that are fun to see a game, of course, but those are definitely the top two for me, and Virginia Tech is cool. I don't know if they'll be able to afford him because Chadwell's going to be a hot name, and I'm sure any school with a vacancy is going to be interested in him, you would think. So I don't know if the Hokies are going to be able to afford him considering their budget isn't quite what it is of some schools, but the buyout becomes a little more tenable for Fuente after this year, so we'll see.
Yeah, can you clarify that? I mentioned that last segment. I wasn't quite sure. I couldn't go to my notes if his buyout was reduced in mid-December or in January.
It actually went down, I think, pretty significantly after this last season. It went down, I think, to like $10 million from – it was way more than that before. And so there was some talk about like, oh, maybe they'll buy him out even, you know, at the end of last season. But obviously it was a hard time for plenty of athletic departments, you know, with COVID and everything else. And so – and I think that they wanted to give him, you know, one more chance to just see how this would turn out. I mean – you ideally don't want to get rid of a coach after just a couple of years. You want to let him build what he's trying to build, and we'll see. I mean, who knows how the season will end up for them, but right now it certainly doesn't seem as if it has worked just yet, so we'll see.
Well, let's ride this out for a moment. He went into Blacksburg with the reputation of being a quarterback whisperer, and he's been anything but that. And if he's whispering, they're not actually, you know, computing the information until they leave there. You look at what Hendon Hooker did to the Gamecocks this past weekend. Hendon Hooker is one touchdown short of his total at Virginia Tech through just a few games starting with Tennessee. And he's thrown almost as many – and I need to go back to my notes. I think he's thrown as many touchdown passes in three starts this year as Virginia Tech has all season.
Yeah, it's really strange. That's been the weirdest part of Fuente's tenure to me, is that we know what he's capable of at Memphis. We saw it. I mean, those offenses were great. And I just have not understood almost anything they've done offensively at Virginia Tech. They've had their moments for sure, and you see that the potential is there. But it just hasn't quite come together. And I did not understand going with Braxton Burmeister over Hendon Hooker in the first place, frankly. Like, I thought Hendon was by far the better of them. And that's not where they decided to go. And that's not to say Braxton Burmeister isn't a good quarterback. I think he is. But I thought Hendon was better. I thought he was last year, too. I thought he was just different. And it's kind of playing out that way. You're kind of seeing the ways in which Burmeister is a little bit more limited. And the offense is even against North Carolina in the opener, like, great, impressive win, all that stuff, although it hasn't aged great. But they did whatever they wanted offensively, and then they just kind of took their foot off the gas pedal inexplicably. And I don't really get it. Offensively, they have just not been quite good enough. And I don't really have any good reasons as to why, but if his tenure ends at Virginia Tech, it'll be for that reason.
We're joined by Lauren Brownlow, WRAL sports fan in Raleigh. You can follow her on Twitter at Ellie Brownlow. And Lauren, before I get onto my main topic, I want to explore yet another thing that you brought up. You mentioned UNC, and that makes me think of Sam Howe. And I'm not buying Sam Howe stock anymore. I'm not saying he's lost any talent.
Right.
I'm not saying he's still not an elite quarterback, but he's not the second coming we were making him out to be in the preseason. Where are you standing right now on Sam Howe?
I mean, I still think he's a really good player. I think it's an interesting – he's in an interesting position for sure, because he's running now – or he's behind a line where he is – you know, the line seemingly has not gotten better from a year ago. I don't know that it's gotten worse. It's hard to say that it's gotten worse, but it certainly hasn't gotten better. He's missing two really special running backs, both of which were outlets for him in the past game as well, especially Javonte Williams. I think we see with Clemson, too, without Travis Etienne, what a difference that's made for their offense. And that's a program that's a little bit more equipped to handle guys, you know, leaving as opposed to North Carolina. And, you know, the receivers, he's got one elite one right now, and the rest are kind of still figuring it out. And I think Sam has just sort of felt like he's got to do everything. And it's not entirely untrue. He's even sort of had to be the running game for them. I am impressed with the way he's improved as a runner, for sure. I think that will help his stock significantly. I think he is closer to the quarterback that we saw, you know, his first 2 years than the one that we're seeing this year. But I think you're also seeing, and we're also being reminded a little bit, that football is a team game, you know, and there's only sort of so much you can overcome and do. And I think it makes us look at other quarterbacks, maybe even like a Lamar Jackson at Louisville, who had almost nothing around him his final year there and still had just a fantastic season. It makes you look at them and not say anything bad about Sam Howell necessarily, but just go, wow, those guys were otherworldly. I still think Sam Howell is very good. I still think he'll be a very good pro. I think he does have that kind of extra competitiveness and drive and grit that you need in a quarterback and sets him apart. But, yeah, obviously this is probably going to hurt his stock a little bit. And maybe it'll be a blessing in disguise. Maybe that means a team that's in better position to win now will draft him coming out of school instead of, like, the Jets.
Oh, the Jets. Look at Lauren Brownlow dropping shade. Might be wow, okay. I'm down with it. I wish I'd had you on to discuss this whole John Gruden thing. We can dive into that another time if you like.
Oh, boy.
That or Meyer. Urban Meyer is so happy for John Gruden being alive right now. Urban Meyer is the only guy. He should send John Gruden a Christmas card every year. But I digress. Back on topic. Clemson last secured a 19-13 win over Boston College, and the Tigers' offense looked better, had more than 400 yards of offense, which I can't believe we're celebrating that, considering everything that's happened over much of the last decade. And, Lauren, there's been a lot of conjecture that the issues with Clemson's offense are roster-based, and then, of course, that goes back to questioning Clemson's reluctance to use the transfer portal to help stock the roster. They have yet to get a player from the transfer portal, and instead are doing it traditionally with recruiting classes, highly ranked recruiting classes, but just high school players nonetheless. And of course, what that done has created at least the appearance of an either or strategy with regards to the transfer portal. In your expert opinion, as a purveyor of all things Atlantic Coast Conference, at what point does Dabo Swinney say, yeah, we need to get with the cool kids and look at the portal?
Well, it's been strange, right? Because Dabo, I mean, I read what he had to say. Obviously, I was a little busy yesterday at ACC tip-off, but I read what he had to say, and it says that he's not against using it necessarily. He would prefer to do it the other way, and that's all well and good. But the problem is, when you have a year where you lose a lot of important and experienced players, you know, and some to transfer too. Like, that's the other part of it. Some went pro, yes, and graduated, moved on, et cetera, but some have transferred. And so, you know, a lot of schools, even top schools, are replacing some of those guys that might transfer or move on with transfers, with experienced guys. And I understand where Dabo's coming from on it, okay? And that's all well and good. But, you know, like you said with the cool kids part, right? If everybody else is doing a thing and it's giving them a competitive advantage, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with dipping in there for a few guys, especially if you have that luxury as one of the better programs in the country. Do I think this is going to, like, doom their program or anything? No, I don't. But at the same time, You know, I mean, you saw this, like, for example, North Carolina basketball. I mean, that's a school that, in spite of a lot of guys transferring, they didn't lose transfers for years and years and years. And then they would add the occasional transfer here and there. It's not like they were against it either, but guys didn't transfer out of there very much. And now all of a sudden you got guys transferring, you know, whenever they want. And you would think in theory, if other schools are doing it, especially, you kind of have to respond in kind and at least maybe try to add a few pieces that might help your roster. Because I understand Dabo's philosophy on it, and I do think it will probably pay off in the future. But at the same time, you're asking a lot of young guys to do something really difficult for them. And you're seeing a lot of schools replace, you know, guys with experienced guys, and Clemson's not doing that right now. And that's why you see them, you know, at 3-2. At least I think that's part of it. I mean, that's just reality. That doesn't mean it's right or wrong, and his approach is right or wrong going forward. I think that remains to be seen, right? But at the same time, right now, that's just what it is. And they're just going to have to take their lumps, at least for the rest of the year, and maybe they will dip into the portal in the offseason, some will see.
You know, it's a lot like the rest of us, though, Lauren, with regards to all of college football. What it was is not what it is and not what it's about to be, and you just have to retrain your mind. And I've always said the mark of the great coaches is the ability to adapt and evolve throughout your career. Mike Krzyzewski, in my estimation, in your opinion, is probably way more meaningful than mine. Again, I think he's the greatest coach of any sport ever simply because of his ability to evolve and to adapt over a 40-year period against so many different types of obstacles and situations. And I think Dabo's just going to have to say, this is how it is. If we want to win, we have to make it work for us. Nick Saban did it, for goodness sakes, when it came to getting a mobile quarterback. It's just, you have to do it.
And the no-huddle offense, remember. Nick Saban hated the up-tempo no-huddle, and then he ended up leaning into it. And I think, you know, the Coach K point is a good one as well, because Coach K, I think, had a period of time where he was a little resistant to some of the changes in college basketball as well. And then eventually he just decided, okay, I'm going to lean into some of these changes. Like you said, he decided to adapt, but he had a period of time there where he wasn't, you know, he seemed a little more reluctant to have guys that would go pro early. And then he realized this is the reality we're in now. He leaned into it, got Kyrie Irving, and the rest is kind of history, right? So, you know, I mean, I think that's like you said, it's a great idea in theory. And I think Dabo has a lot of ideas about amateurism that I don't think come from a bad place at all, but I just think maybe are a little, I don't know if naive is quite the word, but maybe it is. I don't think it makes Dabo some kind of monster or bad person or anything, so I'm not trying to pile on. I'm just saying, it's like you said, I mean, whether you judge this as good or bad, it is what it is. Like, this is the reality, and Dabo can either accept that and adapt to it, or he can keep, like, spouting these ideals about what amateurism should be. You know, I mean, the rest of us are kind of living in the here and now, though.
I'm going to use the word antiquated.
Yeah.
I think that's the word. His ideas are antiquated in 2021, even compared to 2016. They're antiquated, and you have to be able to adapt or die. That's a little severe, but
right. And let's be realistic, and this isn't to be whatever, but Dabo makes a lot of money, and he has earned that money, and he makes a lot of money to win football games, right? So while, yes, you have to build your program and have a culture and have ideals that are important to you, and that is important in college sports. Like, don't get me wrong, it is, okay? But you also have to win football games. And so, you know, at a certain point, you have to balance out those two things and figure out a way to marry the two and do both as best you can.
She's a triple threat journalist in Raleigh, 99.9 The Fan, WRAL Sports Fan, Raleigh, North Carolina. You can follow Lauren on Twitter at Ellie Brownlow. Lauren, as always, it's been delightful. I learn something every time we get together. Let's chat again soon.
All right. Sounds great.
All righty. Thank you. It's Lauren Brownlow, WRAL Sports Fan, Raleigh, North Carolina, on the